right. Exodus chapter 18. We remind ourselves of these different personalities in the Bible that we are studying, that they are, of course, just men, the ones that we have studied so far, Abraham, Joseph, and Moses. They're great men, and they've done a lot of great things, but they're just men who have their faults and flaws, of course, but a lot of great characteristics that we certainly should emulate to the best of our ability. And Moses falls into that category. He is just an outstanding character in the Bible who certainly, there's a lot that we can follow with regard to Moses. And as we go on through this Exodus, we just see what a great leader he was. And as I've been saying, his job was challenging because he was dealing with a very challenging group of people. But he really is doing a great job. As we'll see, even in our lesson tonight, we'll see that probably he's involved in more than you would think. Just as you think about Moses and all that he has done, he was a busy man in trying to take care. Remember, you're talking about 2 million plus people. As I said last week, I think some even believe it was closer to 3 million. But nevertheless, a lot of people. And you just stop and think of, you think of an eldership overseeing even a congregation like this of 160 or so. Or you think of an eldership than some of these large congregations, like 400 people. You think, wow, that's a lot of people to oversee and deal with. When you think about a man who is leading 2-3 million people, the difficulties involved in that. And so he is doing a very good job with that. And we saw last week, we come to chapter 18, and really, chapter 18 is sort of anticlimactic. There's not a whole lot there, considering all the things that we have seen, all the miracles and the plagues and the nations being destroyed and the attacks on Israel that we saw in the previous chapters and all of that. And chapter 18, all we have basically is the reunion, Moses and his family, and then, of course, some good advice that his father-in-law Jethro gives him. But it is sort of an important chapter because it serves like a hinge sort of between the two great divides of the book of Exodus. The first part of it being the Exodus and all of that, how significant that was. And then now the second half of the book deals with the giving of the law and the things associated involved in that. And of course, we don't have time. We won't take the time to look at that in great detail. We'd have to study the rest of the Pentateuch to do that. Numbers and Leviticus and all of Deuteronomy. And we don't have time to do that. That would be outside the scope of what we're doing, just looking at Moses. But we will look at this section of the book of Exodus as it sets forth those things concerning the law. So last week we saw in chapter 18 simply the reunion with Moses. It doesn't go into great detail there, Moses and his family. And as I said last week, there's different takes on that and how all that developed. As I've often said, we don't have all the pieces of the puzzle when it comes to that. I think we can probably assume, no matter what the situation was between Moses and Zipporah, that it had to be a very emotional reunion. They hadn't seen each other in quite a long time. And so he is seeing his wife and his sons for the first time in a good while. Now, sometimes you think of these stories and you lose track. Like, are his children boys or men? They'd have some age to them, wouldn't they, by now? So, but still, nevertheless, it's a reunion. And all we read about is Moses and Jethro and, how close they were. And as I said last week, there's a lot of commentaries. Maybe the majority of them read in a little bit to that and how Zipporah and Moses departed in Exodus chapter 4 wasn't a very good separation, really. And you could assume from some of the language that Moses sent her away, sent her back to Jethro. But then it becomes speculation of why. And some take the worst twist possible, that they just really had a falling out because she was rebellious. And, there's no question from the text in Exodus 4 that she was mad at having her son circumcised, having to do that. And she actually did it because Moses was being attacked for his refusal of neglecting his responsibility. But she was mad about it. And they kind of separated at that time. So, again, but I don't know how much to read into that at all. I would think that no matter what happened, that Moses had to be very pleased to see his family again. But we see merely the emotions involved between Moses and Jethro. And then we read of Jethro, who has given himself to God. And I don't think, as I read the text, there's certain indications to me that this isn't like all of a sudden Moses explains to him all that God has done. And then we read in the text how that he praises God and ultimately offers up sacrifice to God. But I don't think like Jethro was just converted right at that time. You know, you think of the relationship he and Moses had in the past for those 40 years. And some of the language that he uses, it really gives the indication that he is totally leaning towards God rather than all the false gods that he was probably familiar with in years past, and has a lot of trust and confidence in God now. And so that may go back several years before this particular incident when he starts hearing of the glory of God and the delivery of the Israelites and all of that. But one way or the other, it is impressive that now he offers those the sacrifice and all of that. Well, then we come to the advice that Jethro gives to Moses that takes up the rest of chapter 18. And so let's pick up there about verse 13 or so. It says, "The next day Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. And when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone and all the people stand around you from morning till evening?'" And, I mean, you just think again how impressive that is. You think Moses was a busy man? I mean, there's no way. Jethro looks at this and he says, "Man, you are just, this is out of control. I mean, you're going to wear yourself out," is what he tells him, basically. And you stop and think about it. I don't care how many hours Moses put in trying to do this. Let's just be conservative. 2 million people, one man trying to solve all of the issues and all of the disputes from all of these people. Of course he'd be doing that morning to night. And if there were 48 hours in a day, he wouldn't have the time to do all of that. So, and Jethro looks at that and says, "That's just crazy. Like, what are you doing?" And one of the things that is often pointed out from this small text here is it's really a good lesson on leadership. And, you know, one of the problems with sometimes very good leaders is that they're so good at what they do that either they don't want to, or sometimes they're just busy doing what they do. They don't even think about delegating different responsibilities to other people, and they end up just overworking themselves. And how many people have, even in the physical realm, just become completely exhausted because they work too much? And sometimes it's very good leaders like that who just, they get burned out, they end up quitting. It ends up being a bad thing because they just overwork. When they could surround themselves with people who could help them accomplish what they need to accomplish and probably do it more efficiently. And I think of And most of you know from time to time, maybe you don't know, I'm a Los Angeles Lakers fan. But they had a coach that I really liked a few years ago. They were a terrible team, but Luke Walton was their coach. And I kind of liked when they hired him. I kind of glad about that, young coach, and thought he'd really do a good job. And then they brought in LeBron, and that was that. Because he was a young man, the youngest coach in the NBA, and he could deal with a young team, but he didn't have the experience to deal with someone with the experience of LeBron. In fact, they were drafted into the NBA the same year. Can you imagine him trying to tell LeBron what to do? That wasn't going to go well. But they didn't, you know, he coached a year. It didn't go so great, but they actually gave him the option of, gave him a chance at least to stay on as coach. But they gave him a directive. They said that we're going to bring in some assistant coaches. And he didn't like that. He was very loyal to the coaches he brought in. But what they lack now it's a whole different team with LeBron. They brought in some other veterans. And he really needed to surround himself with people who could help him. But he didn't want to do that. He said no. And they said go. So he was fired. But, I mean, the idea, if he was smart, that he would have said, okay, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. And, you know, you even look in whatever sport it is, NBA or really whatever profession it is, and people who surround themselves with those who are accomplished, those who are experienced, those who are qualified, can really do a better job. And as we look at this, what does all that have to do with this in Exodus? Well, as we look at this, Jethro is, I think, a pretty smart guy. And I think he gives Moses great advice. And at the end of the day, it is, listen, why are you trying to do all this work by yourself? Surround yourself with some very capable, good men who can help you. And that's basically, as we read through this, that's what he did. And things, of course, were a lot better with regard to that. Notice the response of Moses. So Jethro comes, and what are you doing? What are you doing, Moses? And Moses said to his father-in-law, verse 15, because the people come to me to inquire of God when they have a dispute, they come to me and I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God in his laws. I think of all the work involved in that. What a great man Moses was. Again, we've seen all his good characteristics, but now he has the ability, even the good judgment, and they trusted him to resolve some of these disputes and to teach them the statutes of God. He's wearing a lot of different hats here. At verse 17, Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you are doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. And there's a message in there, right there, even for local congregations. Like, we even need to learn, as a local church, there's some things we just can't do alone. Like, local congregations are far better off when we realize it's working together, where we can do real good things for the Lord. We can accomplish great things if we're all working together, figuring out what we can do, how we can help, what our talent is, and working together. You try to do anything alone, and it's probably not going to work out as well. You're always, with a local congregation, we're better together, aren't we? If we can get that in our mind, let's work together. And Jethro was smart enough to see this. Moses, you can't do, you know, you would think Moses would come to that conclusion himself. 2 million plus people, what am I doing? But sometimes, you know, you just need someone to talk some common sense into you, to see it, someone from the outside looking in to see it and say, listen, Moses, this is not going to work. There's no way you can do this alone. So he says now, verse 19, obey my voice. I'll give you advice. And God be with you. And I appreciate that little part there because it tells me that it's not like Jethro is just separating God from this equation. That's been a lot of people, a lot of commentaries will come and scholars conclude that Jethro is kind of getting into an area that he has no business to get into. Like a lot of people really think they take this whole context to be kind of an act of rebellion with Jethro. God can take care of the situation. He'll take care of Moses. He doesn't need your advice. But I don't look at this text like that at all myself. Maybe you do. I don't. I think this is good advice, that he just sees what's going on and he's trying to help the situation. And you notice by this little last comment that, again, he's no matter when you think he has sort of been converted over to God, he's clearly with God at this point and has trust and confidence in God. And throughout this, he makes reference to God. God will be with you. If you just do this the right way, God will be with you. And so I don't think he's leaving God out or anything like that, in my estimation. He says, you shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God, and you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, he goes on to say, look for able men from all of the people, men who fear God and who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. So just a very common sense approach, isn't it? You need people, and notice, he's not trying to rob Moses of his authority. He just wants him to deal with the most important things. So, yeah, Dale.
You mentioned common sense. I thought about over in 1 Corinthians 6, where the brethren there, they were taking each other to court.
Right.
Don't you have somebody here among you that is able to,
yes, right,
to handle this?
Yeah.
I know it's a different situation, I understand. But it is a matter of common sense.
Right.
Even common sense.
Yes.
I agree with you. Jethro was... That was good advice.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how long could he have put it, how long could he have done that?
Right.
You know, Moses.
He'd have worn out. It reminds me of presidents. You know, again, a whole different situation. But so I don't know that this happened to Trump, now that I think about it. But, you know, most presidents, you can see their hair change. They go in with black hair and that thing starts going gray quickly, doesn't it? That's because... I don't care how you feel about any president, we can't hardly imagine the responsibility involved in that job. And, you just see in all of them that, their hair just starts going like, man, they're stressed out. Like, who would want to be president like that? And so, it's hard, hard work. And that could have killed Moses. Straight, he could have died of stress. It was just too much. And so I think he did get good advice here. And again, another thing we can learn from this is, in all of this, from Jethro, again, he's telling Moses, you do the important thing. Which one thing we should realize is whatever leans towards the spiritual is always more important, far more important than the physical. And so he's saying, all right, Moses, you look at verse 20 again. You warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Isn't that the most important thing? You teach the people how to live. You make sure they're living according to God's will, pleasing God. And let some of the other things, the little disputes that come up in life, you get other people to handle that. Does that remind you of any other place in the Bible? Acts 6. That's exactly right. Remember that? Look at that in Acts chapter 6, where the very first time that problems came up in the church, it had to do with something like that. It there was the threat, at least, of taking the apostles away from the most important thing. Acts chapter 6 and at verse 1. Now, in these days when the disciples were increasing in number, a complaint by the Hellenists arose against the Hebrews because their widows were being neglected in the daily distribution. And the 12 summoned the full number of the disciples and said, "It is not right that we should give up preaching the word of God to serve tables. Therefore, brothers, pick out from among you 7 men of good repute, full of the Spirit and of wisdom, whom we will appoint to this duty. But we will devote ourselves to prayer and to the ministering of the word." That's almost exactly what Jethro was saying to these. You know, the situation was a little bit different, and the duties, but basically the same thing. Moses, don't leave the word of God to sit here and solve all of these personal issues and little disputes that are arising from all of these people. You devote yourself to teaching the people the statutes of God, telling them what to do, how to live their lives, how to walk before God, and hire all of these others to deal with these different disputes. And now, Moses, remember, by this time was a great man. That's one of the amazing transformations that we see in all of this. When he leaves Jethro the first time, he was, for all practical purposes, a nobody. You know, he was somebody, then he became a nobody for 40 years. And when he went away, and now he comes back, and he has a great name. His name has been, because of all that God has done, and him being the leader, has spread abroad to even, it had even gotten back to Jethro. So now he's a great man. And yet, Jethro, to Jethro, that's Moses. Like, you know, you grow up with somebody or you know somebody and that somebody becomes great. That person is still just that person to you, isn't it? And I remember, it just came to my mind. I remember a guy having a Bible study with a man and trying to teach him out of denominationalism. I thought we were going to convert him because he was agreeing with everything that we were talking about. And he was even in the Bible study giving illustrations of things that were wrong with the church that he was a member of. I thought, man, we have him. He never did obey the gospel. But one of the things he volunteered was that he was, years ago before this, he was kind of an older man. And years before, he was a Bible class teacher. I believe it was a Baptist church. And one of his students, years went by, became the pastor. And now, you know, I mean, that boy, he taught him, and he was just a young boy and everything. Now he's the pastor. He said, you know, I called him by his name. He got mad at me. You know, whatever his name was, it was Reverend so-and-so. Like, really, boy, I taught you in class, and now that's just the way people are like that. And, well, Moses wasn't like that. Here he comes back to Jethro. It's just Moses. And that's why he could use this kind of language that he used in chapter 18. You notice how blunt he was there. Verse 19. Now he says to Moses, obey my voice. I'll give you advice. How many leaders today, great leaders today, with a great reputation, would say, what? You do what? Obey you. You obey me. I'm the one who's in charge now. But not Moses. He didn't say anything. And then after he gives the good advice, what does Moses do? Verse 24, Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he said. And it goes on, the rest of the chapter just goes on, and it shows how things worked out because Moses listened. Listen, it's hard for all of us sometimes to listen to advice from other people. Then the Bible, you go through the book of Proverbs and see how many times we're admonished to listen to good advice. The wise man does that. It's the foolish man turns his ear away from those who know better. And we can learn something from Moses. Again, this all tells us a little something about the good character of the man that we're dealing with. Moses was a great leader, doing a great job here, as I said in the beginning. But he was a humble man as well. In fact, I don't know if it'll even come into our study, but it may. But you remember in one place where we learned that Moses was the meekest man on earth. Like, you think about that. You really want to think about a type of Christ. Here is Christ was lowly and humble. He's the Son of God. He was willing to stoop down to wash the feet of others. And so that is a great example of what real meekness and humility is. Well, Moses was a man like that. He, even though he had all of this power and all of this clout now, he didn't mind someone saying, hey, listen, obey my voice. And he didn't just turn off, you know, just turn, well, who are you? He listened, and he was better off for it. We can learn from that. All right, so that's chapter 18. And then we come into chapter 19. Any questions or comments at all about 18? All right, so now we come into 19, and so again, it's sort of the second half of the book where it changes course now. I mean, the people have been set free and all of that, and so now it's really developing them into the nation that they are and giving them a law that's going to govern them and lead them. And so now we get into the preparation. Really, the law is given in chapter 20. But we get the introduction of that and how that's going to all play out in chapter 19. And when you think about Moses, again, he's a great man, but you know, no matter who you are, you can always use some encouragement. You can always be strengthened. And God knew that even before all of this started. It's very interesting that if you go back to Exodus chapter 3, when he was first speaking to Moses out of the burning bush. And we all recall how Moses was, you know, he was hesitating a little bit and all of that. And so Exodus 3 and at verse 11 says, but Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Then look at verse 12. He said, but I will be with you, and this shall be the sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. And so we know that here, that burning bush, of course, was on this same mountain, out on Mount Sinai. And here's God saying to Moses, now, you know, I don't know if I'm the guy for this, God. Yeah, you will be. And when you get there, when you come back with the people, that will be a sign. When you serve me again on this mountain, that will be a sign for you. Now, here we are all this time later. And Moses has been through all of this, all the plagues, the opening of the Red Sea, the delivering of the all of that we have studied. And think of how encouraging it would be when Moses gets here to this mountain, and he remembers what God said to him. Like, here we are. We're actually here. And all the people are here. And as he serves God now on this mountain, he would have to remember that what God said back there in Exodus 3, verse 12. Because that was a sign God was giving him. You'll know when you get to this mountain again and serve me, you'll know with the people. And all of these people, 2 million strong at least, they were in Egyptian bondage. How in the world was a man like Moses going to get them out of that? Well, of course, he wouldn't do it. It would be God working through him. We all know that. But what a great situation that would be when Moses thinks of this sign that God told him about. So here we are then in Exodus chapter 19. And so we're going to have the law is eventually going to be given, but it begins at verse 1. On the third new moon, after the people of Israel had gone out of the land of Egypt, that would be the third month is what that's talking about. And on that day, most believe that's the first day of the third month, that they came into the wilderness of Sinai. And so you're talking now, if you keep track of all of this, you're talking, it's been, I mean, it's, you read through this and what we've studied, like, man, it's been a long time. It's been about 45 days since they have left Egypt, because it was the 15th day of the first month. Now it's the first day of the third month. And so not a whole lot of time has passed so far as that goes. They're going to spend a whole lot of time here at Mount Zion. They're going to be here for the next year or so. But it's only been like 45 days here. And so they set out from Rephidim, and they come into the wilderness of Sinai, and they encamp in the wilderness. And there Israel encamped before the mountain while Moses went up to God. And so this is the first meeting that God, that Moses has in the mount with God. And God is going to give him a report to take back to the people. So it says here, it says, the Lord called to him out of the mountain, saying, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the people of Israel. A little contrast right there, seeing the house of Jacob, kind of, you think of the humble beginnings of this people. They're just the house of one man. And but what do they turn into? They're the house of Jacob, but they become the people of Israel, the nation of Israel. And none of that's surprising to us. God promised Abraham all of this in the original covenant that they have. So he says, you go back and you're to tell them. It says, thus you shall say to the house of Jacob and tell the people of Israel, you yourselves have seen what I did to you, what I did to the Egyptians, rather, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And so the first part of the report is simply a reminder. You go back, Moses, and you remind the people of all that I have done for them. That's a pretty good way to start. Again, this is preparation to the giving of the law. So this would motivate them, or at least it should. I don't know how much it did in the end, but it should have motivated them to obey whatever the law is as they think about all that God has done for them. And shouldn't we do the same thing? When we think about what God has done for us, again, this passage is really having them to remember how God delivered them. He basically has redeemed them from Egyptian bondage. And there's different passages that talk. Turn over, the second bell is about to ring, but turn over to Isaiah chapter 63 and listen to this language about God. Isaiah chapter 63. I love these passages that remind us just about the loving kindness of the God that we serve and how merciful and loving He is. Because sometimes I don't think we really think of God in those terms. I think I said it last week, we think of God in a more stern and strict fashion, which there's nothing wrong. Of course, we should be filled with godly fear. And we'll talk a little bit more about that next week. I mean, we need to have a respect and awe of God. But we should always remember what a kind, merciful God we serve. And it was out of that kindness and mercy that God delivered the Israelites. In Isaiah 63 at verse 7, he says, I will recount the steadfast love of the Lord, the praises of the Lord, according to all that the Lord has granted us, and the great goodness to the house of Israel that he has granted them according to his compassion, according to the abundance of his steadfast love. For he said, surely they are my people, children who will not deal falsely. And he became their Savior. In all their affliction, he was afflicted. And the angel of his presence saved them. In his love and in his pity, he redeemed them. He lifted them up and carried them all the days of old. Now, this would encompass, if you kept reading down in here, you would see that involves a lot of what God did for Israel in the wilderness and even their deliverance from Egypt. It involved more than that. It was more encompassing than that. But that would be a part of it. And so he redeemed them. And again, what they should realize is, now because of that, they've been redeemed by God. What does the word redeem mean? Bought back. So that means they've been redeemed, but now they belong to God. Like, you keep in mind, because this is true concerning us as well, God delivered them from slavery, but they were never totally free. They went from serving one to serving another. It's only the other that they were serving, the one that they're to serve now, was one worthy of their service. But they went from serving the Egyptians, now they were to serve God. In fact, God even, when he was, through Moses, talking to Pharaoh, you remember the instruction was, let my people go into the wilderness to do what? To worship or serve me. And now that's the case with us too. We've been redeemed. We've been set free from sin, from Satan and sin and from the world. But we're not free to just do whatever we want to. We too have been bought with a price. And our responsibility is now to serve God. And the fact of the matter is, we're all going to serve either God or Satan. Either righteousness or unrighteousness. Paul put that very clearly in Romans chapter 6. How are you going to use your members? As instruments of righteousness or unrighteousness? And it all depends, who's your master going to be? Who are you really going to serve? And so Israel needed to know. Again, all of this is preparation to giving them the law. You remember, remind them, Moses, of all that I did. I set them free. I carried them off on eagle's wings. And now they need to respond by obedience. And so we'll finish taking a look at that next week.